All right. So you are listening to The Real World on CITR 101.9 FM, broadcasting from the unceded territories of the Musqueam people at the University of British Columbia. So The Real World is UBC Film Society's radio segment where we talk about all things film related. And not only do we host this radio show, but we also put on various film screenings throughout the week and host a lot of other events. So if you want more information on those events and updates, follow our Instagram at UBC Film Society. And coming up this week, we have Marie Antoinette at 6, followed by Priscilla at 8. And tomorrow night, we have a student film showcase. So this is going to be very timely, the first two movies, considering what we're talking about today. We are going to be talking about Sofia Coppola films, and we have a very special guest on.
Welcome.
Hello, guys.
So this is Anya. You want to say any words before we get into some ads?
I was recently elected as the co-promotions manager for UBC Film Soc. So I'm really excited to be doing that. And I'm really excited to be here talking about Sofia Coppola, one of my faves.
Yeah, awesome. We're excited to have you on. Welcome, Anya. And welcome to Film Society as well.
Thank you.
It's going to be a great next year. I can tell you're going to run that Instagram like the damn Navy.
Exactly.
In a good way.
Oh, yeah. And before we get two into the Coppola-verse, we're going to play a few ads, some PSAs. You guys know the drill, so we'll be right back after those.
Storytelling is powerful. Our stories carry personal and collective histories, build bridges of understanding, and shine light on unseen truths. Your story, your voice, your power. CITR and Discorder is excited to announce the release of 5 unique podcasts as a part of its Power and Voice podcast incubation program. Power and Voice is an entry-level educational program created by CITR to surpass traditional barriers to entry into the medium of spoken word radio and podcasting. The result is a series of podcasts demonstrating a wide diversity of work in genre, structure, and content. Tune in every day from April 14th to 18th from 2 p.m. to 4 p.m. to hear Power and Voice storytellers share their stories on their own terms and in their own words.
Are you looking to decolonize your self-care routine? Take a trip down to Sisters Sage for a variety of handmade soaps, bath fizzies, smudge sprays, and salves infused with traditional plant medicines. Sister Sage is an award-winning local indigenous business run by Tsimshian and entrepreneur, activist, and community builder Lynn Marie Angus and her dog TJ. Passionate about crafting wellness products that are respectful of the land we live on, Sister Sage is committed to a heart-centered approach to self-care as well as our collective healing. Located on 1312 Kingsway, you can drop by from Monday to Saturday from 10 a.m. to 6 p.m. See you there.
Are you interested in playing, watching, or discussing all things cricket? Look no further than UBC's Cricket Club. Reach out to @AMSUBCCricketClub on Instagram to get connected today.
Tune in every Thursday from 11 p.m. till midnight for Copy and Paste with your host, Tim, a.k.a. Autonomy, the very best in underground dance music.
All right, so we're so back, and we're going to be talking about Sofia Coppola today, as mentioned before the break. So this is, you know, Anya's first episode on it, also Anya's pick. So you want to maybe start us off, just tell us a little about, like, your relationship with Sofia Coppola.
Yeah, so I started watching her in, during COVID, during 2020. I started with Lost in Translation. Because I was really into Scarlett Johansson movies. I was doing the full workup. And, like, that's kind of her transition, Scarlett Johansson's transition into, like, being an adult film star. And, like, Sofia Coppola had picked her after watching Ghost World, which I don't know if you guys have seen, but that's phenomenal. Really like it. So I watched Lost in Translation, and it was just because, like, the themes, and we're going to be talking about this a little bit later, of just, like, loneliness and existentialism really hit home during COVID, and, like, being a teenager and, like, not knowing what I wanted to do in life and just kind of being stuck. But it kind of just got me into film and made me want to be a filmmaker. So,
What more can you ask for from a movie?
Exactly.
And in terms of Sofia Coppola movies that we're going to be talking about today, we will return to Lost in Translation, but we're going to kick it off with her first real big break into the scene. We're going to be talking about The Virgin Suicides, which we all watched together for the first time. So,
yeah.
Very fun experience. So, yeah.
The Virgin Suicides were such a fun experience.
Yeah, not at all traumatic.
Yeah. Well, you know, super chill and casual.
Yeah, nothing happens actually that's wrong at all.
It's no, it's very normal.
Yeah, very peaceful. Yeah, I really like this movie. I really like that it's her first movie. And the whole, like, backstory about it is, like, she read the book, Virgin Suicides, by Jeffrey Eugenides. I don't know how to say his last name. But and they developed, like, a kind of close relationship because she had written it and figured out that somebody else had the rights, actually, to produce it. And her dad, Francis Ford Coppola, obviously, if you didn't know, was like, don't write the script if you're not attached to it. You're just going to get your heart broken and it's not going to be fun for you. She wrote it anyway and somehow managed to get the rights. And the rest is history. And it was her big, like, first project as a filmmaker. She had done, like, music videos before and, like, other smaller things. But this was kind of her transition into filmmaking. And she was, like, avoiding it before because, obviously, both of her parents are filmmakers and just trying to avoid the,
like, the family business.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah, not wanting to be your parents.
Yeah.
I think I'm definitely glad that she, you know, followed in her parents' footsteps. I think right off the bat, you get such a strong, like, stylistic sense of, like, this, especially when she's building, like, a mise-en-scène. Like, I find she really
100%
knows where to go heavy and where to kind of, like, pull back. Like, especially if you compare this to, like, some of her later stuff, like Marie Antoinette, which is very, like, every single shot is, like, filled to the brim. But, like, these are so empty. Like, you really feel this sort of loneliness and this isolation that I think comes a lot of it, like, from suburbia and just, like, growing up in this, like, sprawl of just,
like, very sparse.
Yeah.
Yeah.
There's definitely, like, very minimal detail in the scene picture. And I feel like that really adds this, like, overall feeling of isolation in the film that kind of permeates, like, not even just this work, but all of her works. I feel like to some extent deal with this sense of isolation and, like, grappling what it means, like, with what it means to grow up and to kind of have to choose your way forward in this world.
100%. Yeah, you kind of, like, nailed it on the head. hit the nail on the head. I really, and also, like, more in terms of, like, the isolation, she's very into, like, the theme of, like, the gilded cage. She keeps returning to this, like, feminine character, and it's usually, like, a privileged upper class white woman character, which her movies all seem, and this, I don't mean this in, like, a negative way at all. She's very self-absorbed.
Yeah.
Like, I feel like all of her films are a reflection of where she is in her life.
Yeah.
And yeah, and again, I don't mean that in a negative way. I think that that's perfectly reasonable. But you can see that in Virgin Suicides, it's like they are dealing with, like, this repression and, like, dealing with what they want their individual identity is away from their parents. And yeah, that just comes up over and over again. And that totally works with, like, the minimalism and close-knit and almost, like, suffocating nature.
Yeah.
Very suffocating. No. Yeah. I really liked this movie.
Yeah.
Yeah. I kind of, I feel like I had an idea going into it of, like, okay, like, I know what's going to happen, but I still, I don't think that cheapened it at all. I really enjoyed it. And something that I really liked about this movie that it really made me think about was perspective and how, and I, you know, this might have more to do with the way the book is written, but I think it's really effective for a movie, is, you know, the Lisbon sisters, the main characters, we don't, the story's not told through their perspective, it's told through the perspective of the neighborhood boys who live in their neighborhood and see them and observe them and hear things about them and collect their items that are discarded. And
speculate.
Yeah, and it's, like, kind of just things that they think they know. and they're telling us. And I really liked that. I thought it was really effective in the messaging of the film of, like, these women, we don't really know them. Like, these girls, that plays into the, you're saying, you know, they're trying to find identity because they don't know who they are. Mm-hmm. They've never been allowed to figure that out. And I think it works really well in having that, like, super, super narrow scope.
No, absolutely. So I feel like this is definitely, it's, like, heightened by the fact that they're all kind of around, like, 13, 14 kind of age.
Yeah, I think the oldest sister's 17.
And Cecilia, yeah, who's the first to die, and the youngest is 13.
Yeah. Yeah. And I feel like that's really, like, it really heightens a sense of kind of not knowing who you are, not knowing yourself, and not knowing the people around you. Like, I feel like mm-hmm. that's really the point yeah. where, like, you kind of start to see the stark difference between, like, guys and girls. Before, it's like, oh, you know, you can all, like, play together. And I feel like once you hit, like, junior high, it's like, okay, no, there is this sense of, like, no, you know, the guys do this and the girls do this. And everyone's, like, you know, girls tend to, like, go through puberty earlier. So it's like you're going through that and, like, you're changing and your body's changing in all these different ways. And it's kind of like a death of, like, the innocence of youth in a yes. way. So I feel like this, even the visuals of this, like, very washed out, white, like, pure sort of imagery that's being generated in the film, it feels like it's almost so untouched that it feels like there's something sinister hiding behind mm-hmm. that. And it's almost like lynching kind of sense, I want to say, not to, like, buzzword it out, but, like, this is, there were some moments where I definitely felt like very, like, blue velvet sort of, like, a feeling.
I could see that. Yeah.
I'm not gonna make that claim personally, but I see where you're coming from. Were you gonna say
yeah
something?
No, I was just gonna come back to what you were saying earlier about, like, becoming a teenage girl and, like, what that means. You even, like, one of the early scenes when Cecilia has her, like, first suicide attempt, the doctor's like, you don't have anything.
Yeah, you're 13. What are your problems?
Yeah, and she's like, clearly, doctor, you've never been a 13-year-old girl. Yeah.
Yes.
And I think that that really hits home.
Yeah.
For a lot of us.
One of my favorite quotes, I just remembered it and pulled it up. I remember hearing it and literally was like, oh, yeah, like, that line, I like that a lot. It's the one of the, do we know, we don't know any of the boys' names, really, like.
No, I couldn't tell you.
No. Yeah.
If they're mentioned, they are not in my mind.
No, and that's the thing, too, that I love is that it's not important who they are. Mm-hmm. They're just watching the story just like we are. But yeah. One of them, the main narrator, he says this when they're reading Cecilia's diary. We felt the imprisonment of being a girl, the way it made your mind active and dreamy, and how you ended up knowing which colors went together. We knew that the girls were our twins, that we all existed in space like animals with identical skins, and that they knew everything about us, though we couldn't fathom them at all. We knew, finally, that the girls were really women in disguise, that they understood love and even death, and that our job was merely to create the noise that seemed to fascinate them. That last part, I'm like, that is so true.
That,
like,
was at the end of the movie, right?
No, that's when they're reading her diary.
Oh, I thought that,
it's
okay.
It's like more towards the middle. Okay. That last part, I'm like, that's so true. That's just literally why men exist.
Yeah.
It's like to
fascinate
create us. to create the like the drama, you yeah. know, that, like, it's like, oh, I don't know. I really loved that line. And I feel like it captures the movie so well yeah. too. Like,
I think this was also, like, I haven't read the original book.
No, I would love to read it yeah. after seeing the movie.
Because I like the, like, overlaid narration. Like, I find with, like, sort of book-to-movie adaptations, I find, like, that's usually a really strong choice. Like, mm-hmm. even something like Fight Club, like, where you have, yeah. like, someone literally, like, narrating over top. Like, I find that really helps to preserve the essence of the book. For me, like, obviously it doesn't always work, and case by case is different. Like, yeah. I'm sure the Hunger Games wouldn't be made better by, like, no. Katniss talking over it. But in a lot of these, like, more sort of standalones, yeah. I find, like, that really helps, like, yeah. structure the film.
Well, and I know what you mean, because I feel like in some novels, it would be, like, when you're adapting it for the screen, it would be very, like, lazy. Like, it'd be mm-hmm. like, oh, okay, well, you're just saying exactly what's happening. Like, you couldn't have thought of a creative way to do this. But I think in this movie, it works really well because it's so internal, and yeah. it just plays again into that, like, what is hidden and who do we really know anything about? Like,
yeah,
really
yeah.
nobody in this movie.
And she's such, like, a strong visual director anyway.
Yeah.
She's, like, even talked about her creative process being, like, starting with the visual elements and what she wants it to look like. first and foremost. And I think that she wouldn't use it as a cop-out.
No, yeah.
I think that she genuinely thought it would work the best. And I think it does.
Yeah.
Yeah, no, I agree.
I think her vision, like her, I think one of her strengths as a director really lies in like her visual sense, like how she's able to kind of develop these scene pictures and have this, not even like haziness, but like this sort of dreamlike state to a lot of her films. Like, I feel like even through the three that we watched, I can, like, there's moments where it feels like very like blurry, or like you're looking through like a foggy window or something onto the screen.
Her world building is just incredible all the time. And it's just like, I feel like it's not recognized as much.
Mm-hmm.
And I don't know if that's like, you know, being a female director or like the nepotism side of it.
Yeah.
But I think that it's just,
I think, she's good. Definitely like a lot of her work gets discounted, I think. Not only because she's a woman, but it's also like, oh, your dad made The Godfather Part 2. So it's like you're literally like stacking up against stuff
in
like
Part
that.
3, which she starred in.
Yeah.
Oh, she was in that?
Yeah.
Yeah.
There you go. She said, I don't want to do acting.
Yeah.
But just speaking of the like world, I think something that really contributes to that as well is the soundtrack, which is excellent. Something that I've now that I've seen more of her movies, she does have a great ear. And I think the Virgin Suicides soundtrack is really excellent. It's Air, this French band who I had the pleasure of seeing. They were awesome live, so if you ever get to see them live, I recommend. But they did the soundtrack / score, and this is like Playground Love, which is a very like popular song from this album. And we're not gonna be playing that one though. We're gonna be playing one that's very similar motifs. High School Lover.
Yeah.
By Air.
Yeah, so I guess we'll give that a little whirl. So we're going to play you guys High School Lover, and then we'll be right back for more Sofia Coppola. So that was High School Lover by Air, and that kind of rounds out our little opening chat about the Virgin Suicides, and we're going to be moving on to Sofia Coppola's next film, which is Lost in Translation. So just starting off, get a little read of the room. How do we feel about Lost in Translation?
Listen,
Anya, you start.
I have very conflicted feelings about this movie. Obviously, this was, as I mentioned, like the film that got me into film, like formally. And I think technically it's very well made and gorgeous and on film and whatever. It is problematic, and I'm sure we're going to get into that a little bit, 100%. And the characters are insufferable. Like, that's just, but I think that's the point.
Yeah.
Yes. Yeah.
Obviously. So I have an affinity for it. I have an appreciation for it. But obviously, all criticism is valid.
Yeah. But overall, you like this movie.
Overall, I do love it. Unfortunately, yeah. It's in my
top four. No, don't apologize. Don't apologize.
Yeah.
I imagine you're kind of in opposition to that.
A little bit.
Yeah.
I thought I was really going to like it.
Oh, yeah?
I thought I was like, okay, I like these movies that are like more kind of like meditative, you know, but and while I was watching it, I wasn't like, oh, I don't like this.
Yeah.
And then afterwards, I was saying to you, Anya, I was like, oh, yeah, like, I mean, I knew I was kind of like thinking about it, but doing more thinking the next day, I was kind of like, I don't think I liked it. Like, there are things about it I liked, but as a whole.
Yeah, like as a whole piece. I think I'm kind of like there with you. Yeah. Like, I find if I like zoom in on like individual elements, it can be like, oh, again, I think a lot of it goes back to like Sofia Coppola's very strong like visual style and her ability to like build these really picturesque scenes that kind of just like knock you flat on your back. But yeah, I think this movie, it was kind of doomed from the start for me because I am very much, yes. I was telling you guys about this, I'm very much like a narrative over characters film. So like this is
not that at all.
No.
And Bill Murray here, certified.
That's what I thought you were going to say originally. That's what I was laughing.
Yeah.
No, like honestly, I don't know what it is. I think he just unsettles me. Like I look at him and I'm like, oh.
So funny.
Sets me on edge.
Well, this is quite the movie for him to unsettle you in.
Yeah.
He's quite the unsettling figure in this.
He is.
Yeah.
To an extent.
But I think...
I don't know. I don't want to just be like ragging on the movie.
No, totally.
So let's start with Anya. Okay. Like what, because I feel like the things that we like, we'll probably all agree on.
Yes. What I like. First of all, like Charlotte's character, Scarlett Johansson's character is my favorite. I don't really care about Bill Murray's character, honestly. Yeah. He's a plot device to me, which is not how I guess other people would see it. I've always been like, I literally am Charlotte. Oh my God. And now I'm like, I don't really want to be Charlotte.
Yeah.
But obviously when I was 16, that was not the case. And like the whole scene where they're on the bed, and she's like, I don't really know what I want to do. I just was like, oh, I feel that so heavy. And I love that. And also it's just, it's gorgeous. It's Sofia made it first name basis. She made it. She spent time in Tokyo. And was like, I love Tokyo. I want to make a movie set there where it plays a character itself.
Yeah.
And then we can get into why that's a problem. But so those are what I like about it.
Yeah. No, I really like visually. Mm-hmm. It's really nice. Like you said, Emma, there's kind of that haze.
Yeah.
Which I feel like you really see in this movie.
Oh, yeah.
And I like it. It's very dreamy, which I think works with the pacing.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely.
And the songs, the music.
Yeah, again, phenomenal. Great music.
Sofia Coppola, whoever is, like, cooking up her, like, music deals, give them a goddamn raise. Because how is she getting, like, 20,000 bangers?
Because she, like, mostly picks them out.
Yeah.
And she's like, get me these.
That's crazy. But, no, she knows how to pick a song.
Yeah.
Again, I think talking about like creating an atmosphere, something she's really good at.
Yeah.
But then I think my problem is when you look into like finer details of specifically with this movie, I think like plot and characters, I'm just like, I don't know. For me, I did not feel like any emotional connection to either character. And like, I know you're saying that they're bad people.
Yeah.
And I agree. But I think that if you're going to make a bad, they're not, to me, they're not sympathetic. Mm-hmm. Like, they don't have
enough.
And that,
I think, is the difference, is that that's her goal, is to make them sympathetic. And it just didn't work for
me. I didn't think it worked for me.
Yeah.
Which, like, again, this goes without saying, but if someone else thinks that they really relate, that's wonderful for them. But yeah. I just did not find them sympathetic. Like,
yeah.
I was kind of like, oh, okay, like, I get it feeling lost and, you know, but there was nothing about them that I was like, oh, I really am feeling for you right now.
I also think this is one of her more personal movies. Mm-hmm. This is about her, like, relationship with her husband at the time, Spike Jonze, crazy. And I think that she's supposed to be Charlotte.
Yeah.
And her husband.
Charlotte's husband is.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. And. Spike Jonze. Yeah. And that whole element of it is crazy to me. Yeah.
I feel like, okay, on that, I think if she looked more into that relationship, 100%. It would have been a lot more interesting.
Yeah.
Because I just. Also, I don't know. I have complaints about this movie. I don't want to just be negative, but someone else, Emma, what do you think?
I think for me, I definitely, like, I get what you say about, like, Tokyo being a character.
Yeah.
And I think the choice to pick Tokyo is very, like, how you're saying, like, this is a very personal film for her. Like, I think she does, like, tend to make these films almost for herself, which 100% for herself. Definitely... Yeah. Like, respect as, like, a director being able to go in with such, like, a bold vision and, like, being so uncompromising in that, especially as, like, a woman director. And I think some of that obviously is because, like, you know, she already kind of has all these connections and she's able to be a bit more firm. But I think, like, even the decision to do, like, Tokyo instead of, like, New York or something, which would be, like, the comparable, like, bustling American city.
And even if she wanted to choose, like, a non-English speaking area, I don't know. I think that she had her, I think what she was trying to do with choosing Tokyo was like, I don't know if this is whatever, but it's just like known as a very lonely and isolating city.
Yeah.
I think to a lot of people. And I think because she had spent time there, I think that she was bringing that personal connection again.
Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah. And back to like the characters and her feelings about the characters, I think that she was afraid of becoming those characters. Mm-hmm. I think, and because we talk about, like, they're so unsympathetic, they're miserable, they're racist, and they're just, like, they can't find the joy in anything, and they're so, like, bogged down by their own disappointments or failures or being lost that they can't enjoy where they are, the people around them, or see anything other than their own ideas. Mm-hmm. And I think that that's her being, like, this is not what I want to be, and this is, like, me kind of expressing my fears about my future if I keep going down the path of like uncertainty.
Yeah And I can definitely see that, like, these are kind of like the worst outcomes for, like, you know, a relationship is like starting to kind of fall apart, or maybe it's not quite gonna be what you thought it was, and it's like, this is like the worst way to deal with that.
Exactly.
It's just like emotionally and then literally like cheating on your spouse. So I think there's definitely like, I can see how that would be a very like prevalent theme throughout, like definitely a sense of like cautionary tale. I think for me where this really like doesn't work is like it feels more like a narrative than a story, if that makes sense. Like it kind of feels like I'm just getting like, okay, we're point A, point B, point C, point D, movie over, and it's like, all right, like
what did it amount to?
I can see yeah, because they make no changes to their lives at the end.
Can I like propose something?
Yes.
I feel like the ending, I really like, are you serious?
Oh, I was talking to Caitlin about this.
Yeah, we were talking about it on the bus.
Oh, my gosh.
Me and Caitlin. This is where I realized I was like, actually, I don't like this movie.
Okay. You go ahead.
No, I just, and Emma and I, we kind of reacted the same way when we were watching this. When Bill Murray, first he hugs Scarlett Johansson's character, I was like, oh, okay.
Yeah.
And I went,
wait, why is this like, I'm
both let like a sigh.
Yeah. I was like, I'm satisfied with this. Mm-hmm. This is good. And then he kisses her and I was like, oh,
yeah. And she's 17 also, not her character, but Scarlett.
Yeah, which we don't need to get into that, but just for like narrative purposes, I was like, okay, I think I would have found this a lot more satisfying if he just hugged her,
because
you had to kiss her. To me, it was just like, God, I knew this was coming, and then it happened, and I was still disappointed. And I think it would have, for me, done a lot more for the story if they just hugged.
I don't know.
I think, okay. Totally. I feel that. I think that I don't really have an issue with the kiss because I never at all saw their relationship as romantic. Like, I don't even think that either of them had romantic feelings for each other. I just think that they've felt a really deep connection. And maybe if they were, like, similar places in their life, they might have more of a romantic connection. But I think that they were like, well, it's not platonic. It's not paternal. Parental. And I think that it's just like, so the like amount of feelings all built up over their time and their connection and not really having an other outlet. And they just kind of, it was more of an exploration than like a let's get, like, you know what I mean?
Yeah.
So I don't know. I don't really have like a huge issue with it. I mean, I think that I would have preferred if they didn't, just because I'm like, I don't, what, like, what are we doing?
Yeah.
But I don't have an issue with it per se.
I get that. Like, it definitely feels like it's a sense of not even right person, right time, but just like a person at a time. And it happens to be this person at this time.
And he has like the one night stand with the singer in the hotel room. And then Scarlett's character gets really like jealous and worked up over it. And then they have that really awkward lunch scene.
Yeah.
But so it's like she's jealous, but is she jealous because she wants the attention?
Mm-hmm.
And that's even what Bill Murray's character is like saying to her. So I don't know.
Lots to think about with this movie. I feel like
I could talk
about it a lot more.
Yeah. I think especially some like the issues around it and like how it kind of like
it others.
Yeah.
100%.
And I just want to say the Tokyo is a character thing. I feel like she totally missed use the location. Like, she could have done so much more. But anyways, this is like the most, I feel like this is the most like passionate I've been like talking about something on this
so
show.
Funny.
It's sometimes it's so much easier to talk about something you don't like than something you do, you know?
Yeah.
But again, I don't want to just be complaining. So something really, something that I do like we said, the music.
The karaoke scene.
Yeah. The More Than This, Roxy Music, great choice. But probably what I love this song anyways, and so to hear it in the movie was awesome.
Oh, yeah.
Emma, will you?
Oh, yeah. No, I'll do a little introduction. So off the soundtrack, which is, you know, full of bangers, very plentiful, we picked Just Like Honey by the Jesus and Mary Chain, which I
such
love
a good song.
Heard. It's beautiful. It's great. It's amazing. If this is the first time you're hearing it, you're in for a treat. So this is Just Like Honey by the Jesus and Mary Chain.
True.
All right. And that was Just Like Honey by the Jesus and Mary Chain, which is going to be launching us into our last movie, woo! Marie Antoinette. Woo, woo,
woo. Yeah.
So this was, I watched this one first of the three.
Yeah, same.
And by first, it was like a day before. So not exactly like old in my mind. But when did you see this first?
I watched it in the summer, I think.
Oh, okay. Yeah. So it's still like fairly recent.
Yeah. I watched it last summer also.
Would that check out? Because I said the reason I watched it is because I saw that it was like leaving Netflix soon.
Yeah.
So I was like, oh, wait, let me watch this.
Let me walk in. Yeah. No, I think this one was my favorite of the three by far.
It's definitely her biggest.
Yeah.
And it's like coming off from Academy Award nomination, Academy Award winner from Lost in Translation. And moving into
What did that win?
It won Best Screenplay.
Oh.
And it was nominated for Best Picture.
Got it.
It also was got a bunch of BAFTAs, I think, and Globes.
Nice.
And then so
Marie Antoinette is the follow-up.
Marie Antoinette is the follow-up. Yeah, she has three majorly successful films back to back.
Yeah.
And honestly, arguably her three best films, I would say.
I'd agree. Know, yeah.
If you guys have seen enough to
these are the only three I've seen.
Perfect. They're her best three.
Yeah.
In my opinion. Mm-hmm. And I think a lot of people would agree. And yeah, she finally had like a big budget and was like, yeah, let's go to Versailles.
Yeah.
And
really filmed at Versailles.
On location, huge cast, huge crew.
Yeah.
Yeah. I love this movie. It's so camp. It's so fun. The costuming, set deck, everything's just beautiful and amazing.
Like, I want to eat the costuming. Like, it's so good. And I mean,
let them eat costuming.
Literally.
I know. I would never say that. Really good. Thank you.
I was reading when they were like in the first initial drafts of like starting out with costumes, like Sofia Coppola gave the costume designer a box of macarons and was like, this is the palette I want.
Yes.
This is what I want for the movie.
She and said then, that like, in her that archive book. Film.
Oh, yeah. Shout out Sofia Coppola archive book.
Yeah.
Ani was doing some pre-reading.
Yeah. Do I own it? Yeah. It's my favorite.
I really like the costuming and the set design for this movie.
Yeah.
I think it's like just so pretty.
Yeah.
And it's also based off of a biography, not just like a specific biography, by Lady Antonia Fraser.
Okay.
And it was just
of Marie Antoinette.
Marie Antoinette, yes. And Sophia had read that and had been like, I love the way this portrays her as what she was, like a properly a teenage 14-year-old girl when she was basically kidnapped from Austria to marry a French prince.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. And then everything happened after.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
And just like, and again, Sophia was even saying, again, like I'm talking to her specifically, that a friend of hers had said, oh, it's like you, if you were Marie Antoinette, like a self-portrait in a film. And she was like, yeah, exactly. Huh. So again, very much a self reflection. All of her movies are reflections of herself, I think.
Yeah.
But this one in particular, just the growing up and having people think one thing of you and then like that whole everything switching up and like showing your actual internal and like finding your own identity even though people are like throwing all of these ideas onto you is very Sophia core.
Yeah.
Very Sophia core.
I think like even what you were talking about earlier, Anya, with, like, the idea of the Gilded Cage.
Exactly.
Like, this is, like, the Gilded Cage, you know? Every single frame is just, like, pure extravagance. Except even I really found, like, her use of contrast, even, like, outside of this film, it's just so effective. Like, when you really, like, you get, like, all these, like, huge ballroom scenes, and then it's, like, you'll cut to, like, you know, Marie and Louis' like bedroom, and it's just like this white, like barren space.
Yeah.
And I think like she really understands like how to kind of utilize contrast in a way that it's super effective, like really hits home, especially in this movie. And I think everyone's like portrayals are so compelling. And I know she talked about like kind of letting everyone just use their own accents because it was like, oh, you're not speaking French, so don't bother with a French accent. So
it does make me laugh. I feel like in so many like period pieces, like it's taking place some country in Europe, they always have British accents.
Yeah
And I'm like, what? Okay.
And these like half American and
it is kind of fun because it's like, well, yeah, like none of you are speaking French, so
it wouldn't German, be like the same kind of French
or
different accents.
It is fun how it really plays with like, I don't know, just kind of it's so reflexive, like, as a period piece.
I think, like, even, like, the soundtrack or, like kind of all these, like, classical covers of stuff. Like, I was listening, I'm like, hey, this sounds kind of like Susie and the Banshees. Oh, my God, that's Susie and the Banshees.
And even, there's like...
Which song is it?
Hong Kong Garden.
Oh.
And they go to the masquerade.
That's fun.
Yeah.
I love that movie. But, like, even... like, it's such an inspiration for, like, you see period pieces all after Marie Antoinette, and it's, like, they all are kind of doing the same, like, juxtaposition kind of thing, contrast that you were talking about, where it's, like, they have this really old, you know, Versailles and these old costumes, and then they have, like, the, like, I want Candy playing over her, like, going shopping and getting shoes and trying, like, it's, I don't know, it feels very contemporary, but it's, like, really well done as a period piece.
Mm-hmm. Yes, yeah.
So, I love that.
This was just such a fun movie, like, when I watched it.
Yeah.
I think one of my favorite parts of the movie was just Jason Schwartzman. I just thought he was so funny in this movie.
Yeah.
Like, he's just so awkward and weird and, oh my gosh.
And what we haven't talked about is the Kirsten Dunst.
Yes.
Like,
relationship, yeah.
Yeah, they're, like, besties for the resties. Mm-hmm. Lux in Virgin Suicides.
Yes.
Back here is Marie Antoinette.
I think, like, she's definitely... She has the kind of acting chops to keep up with Sofia Coppola, like, as a director. Like, I can see why she's foregrounding her in both of these films, because she really, she's able to bring this sort of, like, subtle nuance to the characters. I think a lot of it is, like, she has these very expressive eyes. I think that you really get this sense of, like, innocence and, like, girlhood that really, like, jumps out at you in
really
certain moments.
It.
Yeah.
And she always,
like, her birthday party.
And she always has this sort of, like, little, like, mischievous look, I find.
Yeah.
Which I think... The characters, she inhabits that really well.
Because they're all playing different characters, but they're also all, she's always playing Sophia.
Yeah.
Oh.
So I think that, you know what I mean?
There
so
you go.
Like, they're different, but they're all Sophia. So I think it works.
And there's that, like, the
like her muse.
Yes.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Absolutely.
Have they talked about their friendship at all
they
in
have,
the media
they're
or anything?
Very close.
Yeah.
Sophia always talks about Kirsten. And that's for Priscilla, Kaylee Spaney.
Yes.
Who plays Priscilla. Met Kirsten Dunst on the set of what's the one, the Civil War,
A24
that came out last year.
Alex Garland.
And they had filmed that before Priscilla, I believe, and Kirsten Dunst had recommended Kaylee Spaney to play Priscilla.
Oh wow!
And so the rest is
that's
a story.
Awesome.
World works in mysterious ways.
Yeah. Yes. So you know she takes obviously gotta have a great relationship to have that happen.
I know.
Very cool. And Kirsten Dunst is also in The Beguiled, right? Is she?
Oh, now I don't know, because I know it's Nicole Kidman. Yeah, Nicole
Elle
Kidman.
Elle Fanning.
Yeah, I don't think. Oh, yes. No, she is in
okay.
it. She is in it.
So they've done three movies together?
Yeah, I believe.
Damn.
I'm, like, thinking, going through the list in my mind. Yeah, I think just the three.
Okay, nice.
But still, that's, like, a lot.
Yeah.
For, like, actor, director, you definitely get a sense of, like, oh, this is, she's a bit of a muse.
Yes, for sure. And I feel like Marie Antoinette is kind of, like, taking... Their relationship, Sofia Coppola's visual eye, taking everything about her as a filmmaker and, like, turning it up to the, like,
exactly.
max.
Yes, no, totally.
It's opulent, it's crazy, it's contemporary, like you said, in some ways.
Yeah.
It was not
really
well received.
Yeah.
It was really badly received. Exit was at Cannes.
Mm-hmm.
That's where it premiered, and all the French people were booing it.
Yeah.
Because they were like, how dare you... make a movie about our history.
Yeah.
And now it's beloved again.
Yeah. So I feel like sometimes films just, they don't get their, especially these more like camp and like ostentatious films, don't get the roses on the first run through.
Yeah.
But then like upon reflection, you can really see like the genius kind of shine through and like how unlike anything else this film really is.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Like obviously there's other films that are huge and like eye popping, but like this on like such a big, not even commercial, but just on like such a big budget scale.
Yeah.
And to film on location in Versailles.
Yeah,
like,
that's like
incredible. And there's an elephant.
Like, yeah. The amount like of care and love that went into this film is so visible. I'm like, I'm so glad like the costume designer. I know she went on to work like with Wes Anderson on like Grand Budapest Hotel and she won like an Oscar for this movie, which.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
I mean,
can absolutely see why. Like for me, this is really the standout point. Like that and the soundtrack just make this movie.
And it's so funny how like afterwards Sophia was like, I need to take a break and then went to film somewhere back in the States and it's just one location pretty much.
Yeah.
And it's just like two actors And she just, that was her one big one. And now she's like, I'm ready to chill and do more. And just like the evolution of her as a person being reflected and her, the, like just everything about growing up in the public eye and being famous and everything.
Very interesting. Well, we'll definitely have to watch. And I will have to watch more and see that trajectory in full.
Sofco pilled me now.
Yeah.
Yes. Woo-hoo. And if anyone else has been convinced, like we said, tomorrow.
Yeah.
At the is it tonight?
It's tomorrow night.
Tomorrow. Thursday at the Norm. Marie Antoinette.
Doors at 5:45.
And Marie Antoinette and Priscilla. So if you have been, you're intrigued, go watch.
Go check them out. Yeah. And, you know, to whet your appetite for some Marie Antoinette, here is I Want Candy by Bow Wow Wow. Right, so that was I Want Candy by Bow Wow Wow off the Marie Antoinette soundtrack, which you can see for yourself tomorrow at the Norm. Show up. It'll be a great time. If you've never seen a Sofia Coppola movie, now's your chance.
Yeah, be there or be square.
6 p.m.
Yeah, absolutely. Please pull up.
That was our Sofia Coppola episode.
It was, yeah. Any last things you want to say?
No, I thank you guys so much for having me.
Of course.
Had a blast. Follow us at UBC Film Society on Instagram.
Yeah. She's going to make her and Caitlin are making the Instagram look very nice for us
very
next year.
Beautiful.
So you guys get excited.
Very absolute cinema.
Yeah.
Very absolute cinema.
Thank you again for joining us, Anya. Mm-hmm.
Thank you.
We'll be back in 2 weeks, I believe.
I think so. Two weeks. We're getting to the end, you guys.
Yeah. Oh. We've just got, I think, 3 or 4 episodes left, and then we'll be off for the summer, but you can be looking forward to hearing Hannah and I's voices once again come the start of the next school year.
Mm-hmm.
So we'll be very excited to round out this year. We've had a great time hosting. Hopefully you guys have had a great time listening. Thank you again, Anya, for coming on.
Yes, of course.
As almost per usual, we'll see you in 2 weeks, 4 to 5.
I think, roughly.
Yeah. CITR, 101.9 FM. You guys know the drill.
See ya.
I've been Emma.
And I've been Hannah.
And I've been Anya.
Yeah. See you guys. Thank you for listening.
Thank you. Bye.